Want to rise above what holds you back? These are the stories of those fighting that battle. It might also be the story of you. I'm Dan Waldschmidt, author of Edgy Conversations and strategist to billion-dollar companies all over the world. This is Mark Menard, author of The Story of You, the guy who knows a thing or two about never giving up. You're listening to Elevating Beyond. Let's get started.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Elevating Beyond with a two-word mission statement: change lives. And as usual, we have an amazing show. I'm here today with Jack Canfield and Miriam Laundry, and we're going to get into why I have both of them here together here in just a few minutes. But what we want to jump into right off the bat here is, first of all, Jack Canfield, who's widely known for the Chicken Soup for the Soul series, which has sold over 500 million copies. That still blows my mind. I had the amazing co-author, Mark Victor Hansen, on, and his lovely wife about a month ago. But Jack, before I give you a chance to say hello, what I also want people to know on the flip side of that is Chicken Soup for the Soul was rejected over 144 times. So both of you, how are you? Jack, first of all, how are you doing today?
I'm fine, Mark. I'm fine.
And Miriam, how are you doing?
I'm good. Also doing well.
Awesome. So we will jump into it, Jack. And if you could just share that backstory, because a lot of people, they hear the success part of it and they don't hear this. Wait, what? He was rejected, like, because 20 times is a lot. 50 times. Dr. Seuss was rejected 44 times, I read. And I was like, man, 44 times? How does he do that? But you were rejected 144 times. Please share with us what happened and how you got through that.
Well, basically, the first 21 happened in New York. Mark Victor Hansen, my co-author, and I went to New York with an agent, and we had 7 meetings a day. Each was about 40 minutes, and then we'd get in an Uber, or I don't even, probably taxis back then, and just run to the next meeting, you know. And then our agent gave us the book back after 21 rejections and said, "I can't sell it, and you guys are on your own." And everyone in New York said, well, people don't read short stories, collections, they just don't sell. And that was true for nonfiction. I mean, for fiction, it was not true for nonfiction, we found out. But basically what happens, we then went to the, I'd say maybe we submitted to 20 other publishers by mail. And then we went to the American Booksellers Association convention, which was all the bookstore owners that would get together. And this was in Anaheim at the big convention center. And we went booth to booth to booth for 3 days. Would you publish our book? Would you publish our book? Would you publish our book? And we got no, 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 no. We weren't famous. We didn't have what they call a platform. Like, you have a podcast now, so you've got listeners, and I've got, you know, a million Facebook followers and so forth. So late on the third day, this one publisher said, yeah, we'll take a look at it. And they read it when they got back to Florida. That was the 145th publisher. So, you know, and they said they cried when they read it because of, you know, was there's some very touching stories. Right. And then what was interesting was we said, well, what kind of advance do we get? And they said, well, we don't do advances. So it was like, basically, we were just happy to get it published at that point. And he said, we'll give you 20 cents of every dollar that we sell. And that turned out to be a really good deal since we sold tens of millions in the United States and hundreds of millions around the world. So, you know, long time. But, you know, I'll share one story with you. The guy that invented there's a little valve that makes your airbag go off in your car. Mm-hmm. The guy that invented that spent 8 years lobbying Congress to pass an airbag law. So 8 years, no income. The next year when they finally passed it, he made $8 million. So when you look back, he did $1 million a year over 8 years.
Right. So
you have to realize sometimes you put in a lot of time to get eventually a big result.
Yeah, I always say it takes at least 10 or 15 years to become a, quote, overnight success.
There you go.
And every guest I've had and my own story, even here in the studio, I started 14 years ago with my office in a barn, 26-year-old kid starting a company for individuals with developmental disabilities, the first one in the state to do it, and was getting threatening phone calls all the way up, like from people that work next to the governor. And now we have our company Dreamshine. We serve over 55 individuals with developmental disabilities and over 20 people on the team, and the podcast and books and all that. I did my first podcast episode. I didn't have a studio like that, like this. I was sitting in my car, like just with a headpiece in, and it was raining. The audio sounded like crap. I had no idea what I was doing. And years and years and years later, we have millions of listeners, and you just, I mean, you know it, but it's just, it's so great that people hear that story behind the story. Cause I know when I was younger, which we're going to get into about this book that both of you have written, really in my younger years, I didn't believe that I could be like, quote, successful. Like I never would have imagined that I could be up here right now, even speaking. And I thought, well, people must just be born with talent. And I really believe like they were born with courage and they were born without having fear or worry or anxiety. And I'm like, well, that's just for them. And that kind of led me into the path of then getting in some trouble in high school and other things too. But what I love about, and I'll hold it up, and Jack for the video too, the new book that I'm sitting here with Jack Canfield and Miriam Laundrie, who have co-authored, they sent me the version I printed off to everyone that's watching here. It's I Can Believe in Myself. Jack, you're holding up the official version right there.
Yeah, we just got it last week from the publisher.
That's awesome. The illustrations are amazing. And before we get into that book, I just want to say something I read on your bio, Miriam, about, well, first of all, you have 4 kids, which I love because I have 5, and anyone that gets up to that number of insanity, I always respect.
Yes.
Something else I thought was really cool is, if I read it right, you hold a Guinness Book World Record, which involved getting more than 100,000 children and creating this like positive mental health movement that you're doing. Like, can you explain about that real quick? Because I thought that was awesome.
Sure. Well, thank you. Yes, this takes me back to 2014. I'll share that I Can Believe in Myself, the book. First, I self-published that book in 2013. And it was after losing my 17-year-old niece. She died by suicide. That's all I could think about. What can I do so that other families don't go through this? And when the book came out, I decided that I wanted to empower 100,000 children. I was sitting at a Jack Canfield seminar at his Train the Trainer program at that time. And he said, write your breakthrough goal, a big, big goal. And I wrote down that I wanted to empower 100,000 children to honor my niece. And I'll just tell you, Mark, as soon as I wrote that, I was overcome by fear and the thought of, why did you write that number down? 1,000 children would have been great, 10,000 children, but that's the number that came to me. So that's what I worked on, organizing this event to bring awareness to positive mental health in children. And I received a Guinness World Record for that.
I love it. I mean, Jack, that's your why right there, huh? Every time you hear those stories from your seminar, it's like shoot for the moon. Even if you miss, you'll be amongst the stars. That's not my quote. I'd love to take credit for it, but that's what you did.
No, it's true. I every day I get a letter or an email or a present or a book that someone wrote, you know, saying you changed my life. It's really quite extraordinary. I feel very fulfilled. And it's nice, like Miriam's a ripple that I helped create by dropping a pebble into the pond. And now she's creating ripples with all the books that she's written, and we're writing together to go out and create more ripples. And she's now helping people that want to write children's books write their books. So that's another layer of ripples that are going out. So pretty amazing, pretty amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love it. And something else that I think is interesting too is like, the different levels that you have and kind of even that in between, especially even a lot of what we've been going through with this past year and life, where it, like you just mentioned, you wrote down, I want to inspire and make this movement to 100,000 kids. And then you're excited about it and you have the vision, but then everything around your current circumstances look nothing like the actual reality of what you're wanting to have happen. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, that whole perseverance of the in-between of whether it takes 30 days, a year, 8 years to get there, what are some things that you have each done? And Marian, we can start with you, like personally, when you're going through those kind of in-between levels where maybe you're not even facing like severe adversity, but sometimes it's even just going through the daily routines, but knowing I have this dream that's so much bigger than me and I know it's going to happen, but mm-hmm. nothing around me is matching those current circumstances. Like, how do I keep going and pushing through till I have that actual breakthrough?
Mm-hmm. And you're absolutely right about that. It's, you know, it starts with a thought and making the decision that you're going to go for that. And then I feel like every time I set a big goal, fear is inevitable. It just kind of comes and, you know, it makes you doubt why you even set it in the first place. But it's, I think it comes down to understanding why you're doing what you want, what you're doing, why you set that goal in the first place. And for me, it was a desire to make a difference in children's lives. And, you know, I got home from that particular seminar and I put my niece's photo on my board right in front of me. And every day when things got tough, I remembered my purpose. I had a higher purpose than just wanting to publish a book. It was to impact children's lives. And so at the beginning, you know, all the doubt that comes in, I think it's first understanding that and then asking yourself, okay, fine. If I am going to do this, how would I do it? And I didn't know for a long time until one day the thought of going for a Guinness World Record came to me. And that comes from the people you surround yourself with. Like, I had been in Jack Canfield's courses. I had been doing that already for a year. I must have remembered that Jack has a Guinness World Record, you know, but it's just how your brain starts right. putting the pieces together. So Jack has a Guinness World Record for having a New York Times bestseller, 7 books in the New York Times bestsellers at the same time. I believe that's what it is. Right. So anyways, having that idea, setting that goal, and then surrounding yourself with people that are already at a higher level, that really, really helps. Having accountability, mastermind groups, being in an environment, putting yourself in that environment where people are doing more and are achieving more. So that would be my quick little tip.
No, I love it. And there's like, first of all, everyone listening, your why is so important, and how you put it, like hang it up somewhere, wherever you need to see it, so you can have those daily reminders in those moments. And who you surround yourself with or choose to not surround yourself with is so key, because it's amazing that when you keep getting around people that are at another level, what used to seem like truly unbelievable becomes the next normal. Cause like even in my own life with having a business for individuals with developmental disabilities, people didn't do podcasts and start speaking and writing books like in that world that I was in. And then I started getting around other business owners and other authors. And then all of a sudden it was like, wait, why don't I have a book? Everyone. And then when I went to have it, it was like, well, yeah, everyone has a book. I mean, that's great, Mark. You've done it. But it was like the new normal, because mm-hmm. all those people that were challenging me and around me. And something with that I wanted to ask with you too, Jack, is a lot of people could think, all right, I mean, 500 million copies, built this $1 billion publishing business, Guinness Book World Record, 7 times New York Times bestseller at the same time. Well, this guy must not face fear anymore. He must not go through doubt. What do you have to say to that?
Well, I do. You know, and I did in the beginning as well. You know, I wrote my first book in 1976, before many of your listeners are even born. And it took me a year to do that. I was like, who am I to write a book? I'd only been a teacher for a couple of years. It was called 100 Ways to Enhance Self-Concept in the Classroom. And but I just wrote a couple of techniques every night in my basement. You know, I had a hollow core door on top of two file cabinets. It used to be the cheap desk, you know, that you could have.
Yeah.
And I was afraid to show it to anyone. I was afraid people would reject it. You know, I was afraid that I was wasting my time, all of that stuff. I think what happens is that you develop confidence by facing, you know, by doing things that are scary. Someone says self-confidence is the result of surviving a risk. So if I ask a girl out in high school for the first time and nothing bad happens, I feel more confident to do it the second time. And so every time I've written a book and it's done well, and I've had some failures, I've written a couple of books that didn't do well. But you know, what do I get afraid of today when I'm doing something that I've never done before? I think the biggest thing for me is a fear of rejection. Like if the first time I talk to all policemen, you know, I'm Mr. Love and Light and everybody can do what they want and they can achieve their goals. And all of a sudden I'm talking to guys who are out on the street with people shooting at them, you know? So yeah. It's like, are they going to think I'm too soft? Are they going to, are they going to respect me? You know, first time I ever talked to, I did a talk once for 8,000 people and it was like, whoa, and that was scary, you know, because I couldn't even see the back rows. And
yeah.
You know, how that was going to come across. Or if I'm talking to a group of doctors or a group of lawyers or a group of people, first time I spoke to all Muslims in Oman and in Dubai and people like that, and you're looking up and you're seeing all these women with these black, all you see is their eyes on one side, all the men are on the other side in white. And you're wondering if they're going to buy into any of the stuff you're teaching them because you're an American. And so there's that reality, but you know, I would say these days, not a lot scares me because I've pretty much done everything except jump out of an airplane that, you know, and I don't have any desire to do that anymore.
you know, what's funny, Dubai is where I did jump out of an airplane for my first time for my 40th birthday over the part of the ocean where you see I forget that sand dollar shape or whatever, the island. Yeah, it was cool.
Yeah, all those countries. I actually ran a workshop in a hotel on that little island.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Well, you have to go skydiving next time so we can get some more fear in you. But no, I love how you were put in that too, because it's kind of like there's always different levels of going out of your comfort zone, even at another level, and fear doesn't go away. And how you become courageous is taking action through the fear. It's like I'm feeling, you know, I love everyone to hear this. And this is what comes down into this book that we're talking about, the children's book, which is great even for adults to read with the children. And that self-esteem is learning these things that we all get these voices in our head at different levels saying, you know, you can't speak to these all these doctors or lawyers or these policemen, you're not good enough to do that. And when we allow ourselves to listen to that, we freeze up, you know, and when you take action while you're afraid, you find that courage and then you realize, well, I can do that. And I did do that. And then you're able to, when you face your next new scary thing, to draw back on, well, now I'm feeling afraid to speak in Dubai. But I remember when I was feeling that same thing with the police officers. And if I got through that, I can get through this. So it's like each little thing you do builds that courage muscle.
Right. And I think the thing too to realize for everyone listening is that anytime you set a goal that's bigger than a goal you've achieved before, there are three things that always show up. They're natural. Fear, what we call considerations, which are your thoughts, and then external and internal obstacles. So, you know, if you wanted to open a head shop to sell marijuana in California 20 years ago, there was an external obstacle called, there was a law against that. Yeah. Now they passed a law now where you can't do that. You know, it's legal now. But that would have been an obstacle you had to confront. If you want to go on a vacation to the lake and your wife wants to go to the mountains or the ocean, then that's an obstacle you've got to deal with. There's fears, which we've been talking about. They're natural. They always show up. And then the final thing is your thoughts show up. I can't do that. My father, you know, I have to borrow money from my father. I hate asking my father for money, whatever it is. And when you realize those are natural, and you realize they're always going to be there. And so don't see them as a stop sign. I always say, see them as a caution sign. Like when you're getting on the freeway, on the on-ramp, don't let it stop you. Just know this is normal. And then let that normal be there. And as you said, just take action in the face of fear. What kills fear is action. And then the other thing I would just say to everyone about fear is always in the future. You know, we've seen that future experiences appearing real, fantasized experiences appearing real for FEAR. And the idea is I have to imagine something bad happening in the future. So another way to get beyond fear is imagine something good happen. Imagine this: the policemen are going to give me a standing ovation. Imagine everyone in Oman goes, wow, we need this here. We don't have this. This is important. You know, so you can imagine the positive outcome instead of the negative. And that gives you the courage to move forward as well.
That's great. I love hearing it like that too. That kind of like flips the script on your mind and shows that you have more control over that. I mean, it's our imagination, like you were saying, with a fear. So if you're going to use your imagination, use it for good and try to think of the best outcome that it can be versus defaulting to that negativity, which can come for it comes to all of us. And in the book, again, I'm looking at it right here. I Can Believe in Myself, talking about self-esteem. What are some of the things that, you know, I don't want to give anything away in it, but Maryam, that you really love that kind of help people, the characters challenging, like getting up and speaking. I remember there's a character in there and she's getting ready to speak in front of an audience, and adults and children and everyone face fear in that. What's some advice that you have and how you put it in the book for how kids and adults can build that self-esteem?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the book is called I Can Believe in Myself, and it's all about letting go of that can't, of, you know, that word that comes up, and it's really such a dangerous word. So the why I wrote that book in the first place was we wanted children to let go of the word can't and start believing in themselves. And when I go into schools and I speak to the children, I talk about three things that you can do to achieve success. And for this little girl, it was to get up in front of her class and talk about her show and tell. And that was her fear. That's what she kept saying. I can't get up in front of the class. So the first thing is to start believing that you can, to start saying, I can do it. What happens is when we start saying, I can't, that word stops us. It limits us. We're not even going to try. But if we just switch it to, okay, I can do it, I'm going to do it, then that gives you hope. It gives you possibilities. So step one is to believe that you can. Step two is to find somebody that knows how to do what you want to do and ask them for help. And I share the example when I'm in schools about my daughter learning to do a cartwheel, right? For a long time, she said, I can't do that. And she didn't even try. But all of a sudden, when she started saying, okay, I can do a cartwheel, she tried to do it. She went to do it and she fell. But what was different now was she kept saying, okay, I can do it. Mm. The second step is she found somebody to ask for help. And she found our babysitter who knew gymnastics. So our babysitter was able to give her some tips. You put your hands like this, your legs straight up in the air. And that's somebody that helps her. And then the third step is to practice and practice until you can get it done. You know, most of us, we're not going to be able to do it the first time. It takes some practice, whether it be doing a cartwheel or whether it be, you know, playing a sport, writing a children's book or anything that you want to do. You have to practice and practice until you can get it done. And after about 2 weeks, my daughter was able to get her cartwheel to land it and to be so proud of herself. So it's something that I share when I go to schools: three steps to success, believe you can, ask somebody for help, and then practice and practice. I think if we can follow those three steps, we're going to be able to do a lot more.
Well, I love it. And that is something, there's such a gap in schools where they don't teach one of the most important things in life, like a class called mindset and self-confidence and starting at that earlier age with a book exactly like this, like teaching I can, and really going over these real life stories that are practical. It's great to learn math and, well, some of it, I don't know. Like, so I had to learn things that I just use a calculator for these days, but the whole mindset part of it, you know, and confidence and self-esteem are so important, and it's not really taught in a practical way. At least it hasn't been for me when I went to school or any of my five children from what I've seen. So how have you been getting, well, when is the official release date for this? And we'll have it all in the show notes too, so I make sure all the listeners can be checking it out.
Yeah, I Can Believe in Myself comes out February 23rd, just a couple of weeks, and it'll be available on Amazon.
Okay, awesome. Yeah. We'll have the link for that too, because right around when the show airs, we'll be close to the premiere when it's hitting number one on the bestsellers list.
No, you know what's fun about all of this and what you bring up, Mark, is so true, that there should be a class in school. My graduate work was at the University of Massachusetts, where I got a master's degree in education. And one of the things we were working on was developing a course called self-science. So we have the mathematical sciences, the natural sciences, social science, et cetera. And we don't have a science of how do you study yourself. Things like mindset, things like goal setting, things like values, things like, you know, dealing with your feelings and so forth. And these are the things that really create the problems in life. I taught history for a couple of years, and I often say, I don't know anyone who got divorced because they didn't memorize the five causes of the American Civil War. You know, it's like they didn't learn communication skills.
Right.
They didn't learn how to apologize. They didn't learn how to forgive people. They didn't learn how to ask for what they needed, so forth and so on. So basically, what's had to happen, unfortunately, is, you know, I do, well, until the pandemic, I was doing, you know, two workshops a month in hotel rooms, teaching people the things they should have learned in school. Yeah. And now we have all these children's books that Miriam and I write and other people write, and Miriam's helping other people write as well, that are dealing with teaching kids the things they really need to know in order to live their lives effectively. Things like mindset, like I can believe in myself. Things like, you know, we have another book we did called The Big Bad Bully, which is all about the inner critic and how our inner critic puts us down. The big bad bully isn't necessarily the one out there that's teasing you. It's the one inside that tells you you're too fat, you're too short, you've got too many freckles, your hair is too curly, whatever it might be. And so we've now committed to writing a number of books to teach these important lessons, one of which is self-confidence, which the book I Can Believe in Myself is for. And as you said, what I think is exciting about it is not only is it good for kids, it's good for adults, because we all have that thing, well, I can't do that. You know, I can't stand up to my husband. I can't tell my teenage son to come home at midnight, you know, because he'll get mad at me and I'm divorced and he's the only one who loves me. And so if I confront him, you know, I mean, there's a million things that go on that we tell ourselves we can't do. And that really disempowers us. And so we're wanting to create a whole nation of people who believe that they can do anything they choose.
And it's this goes into leadership, you know, so much too. And things you're talking about now is something I love, is healthy conflict, because so many times we're taught that conflict is, oh, that's wrong. If you're having conflict, that's a negative thing. But it's like, no, like the organizations and the teams that are winning and in leadership in books like this, is it's also learning how to do conflict well and how to have it come out in a healthy way, and understanding by avoiding some things doesn't make you nice. It makes you a coward. And I've learned those lessons the hard way and been continue to grow and develop and get myself around other people like you that have been where I want to be and always are challenging me in the great ways to grow. But I love this starting in the younger years, because I know there'll be children and parents reading it. And a lot of times it can sound like more common sense to us because we've been so involved and studying and like dealing with your inner critic and everything for years. But there could be a mom or a dad reading this book with their children and talking about that voice in your head saying, you know, you're not good enough to do this. You're too fat. You're too ugly. And realizing, whoa, wait, I still do that. And like, that could be, it will be a game changer for them also.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. In fact, in the book, the book takes place in a classroom in a school, and the protagonist is a girl named Molly who has to give a show and tell report and is afraid she can't do it. And then she starts noticing all the other kids and all the I can'ts they're saying. And she even noticed the teacher saying, I can't get through the morning without my cup of coffee. And so in the book, the teacher actually has to confront her I can't as well. So it brings in that I can't with the adult as part of the story.
What would you both, and I'll take turns with each of you as we're getting closer here, over this past year with what everyone has, the whole world really has been going through, and you talk about the negativity, the I can'ts, and what you intentionally surround yourself with. What is some advice you would give to people who, I'm trying to think, some people that have been glued to the news, the 24-hour news, and you know, they're constantly stuck in this fear and negative cycle, thinking that because really all you're hearing, I don't care what news station you pick, for the most part, it's not happy stories. And so you're just filling your head with a lot of this, I can't, and so much more. What would you say, and I'll go with you, Miriam, starting off, to people that really have been stuck in this cycle and are really, really, really struggling right now? I know some people that still haven't left their homes and medically they can, and they're safe to, and they're almost like really caught up in this shell right now.
Mm-hmm. The first thing that I would say is turn off the news. there are things that we can control, right? And we cannot control what's going on in the news and what's going on, but you can control the fact that you could be watching the news a little too much, that fear is you're getting more and more fearful as you watch that. So limiting that would be my first thing. And I think even though all of, you know, the past year, we've all experienced COVID because we're all in our homes, there is still a lot of good. There's still right. So much good that happened in 2020. And that's what I want to focus on with my children. I shared that I have four children. Those are the questions we ask them. Like, what's great? What's happening right now? My children, for the first time since before the winter break, just went to school today. School's just open. And we want to appreciate the time that we had at home. Like, it's been months of them being at home. We want to appreciate that. Yeah, they got a chance to practice other things. We did a lot of puzzles. We played a lot of board games, right? And that was good family time. So let's focus on that. You know, they were very hesitant to go to school today because they're just used to being home now. But so we started talking to them. Okay, well, what's something you're looking forward to in school today? And it took them some time, but they finally figured, okay, oh, I'm going to see Joey. I'm going to see my friend. I'm going to see this person. So always focusing on the good. There's not a lot of things we can control in life, but that's one of the things we can, our thoughts. So just right. Helping children see that for themselves also.
I love your first statement of turn off the news. I couldn't agree with that more in my own life. And even advice to people, as Jack, you were mentioning marriages, I've been married for 14 years. My wife's originally from Sierra Leone, West Africa. And so it's been cool because we've had a lot of challenges, but also what's really neat is getting to know other people for who they are versus what we think they are, what the news says that they are. It is such a great way to bridge that gap. But that being said, my wife still loves her routine of watching the news. We used to argue about it. I'd be like, I can't wake up. And so now she'll watch it. That's great. I'll put my earbuds in and I'll start listening to some motivational stuff or my Audible book or something in the morning. And it works. And she can see the shifts that it has in me, but I don't have to try to convince her, but also I don't have to be thrusted into that environment, because I could notice just from a short time of watching it, I already have enough stuff in my own life that I have to deal with. And I have my own dreams that I'm going after and lives that I'm changing. And it's like the news will get me worrying about stuff that I love and I pray for everyone, but it's things that I don't have control over. And I'll notice myself kind of buffering when I'm watching that, and I'll be like, man, I wasn't even thinking of that, but what if that does happen? And what if this person does get elected? What if they don't? Or what if this? And it's just the next thing I know, I've literally wasted an hour on these what ifs or I can'ts that have totally taken my focus away and that energy on the dreams and the lives that I personally believe in, and God, whatever people's beliefs are, that I've been given to serve and to lead. And it's like that takes away from it. So that right there, if people can just please understand what a huge takeaway that is. And if you're hooked to it, maybe even try to start, cutting it down in little doses, like watch one part of it for a day instead of keeping it on all 24 hours a day. What would you say to all this, Jack?
Well, I think one of the most valuable inputs I got growing up was when I went to work for a man named W. Clement Stone, who was a self-made multimillionaire. I was in my 20s. He was worth about $600 million in 1970. And he said to me, how many hours a day do you watch TV? And I said, I don't know. And he said, well, think, young man. I said, okay. And so I said, I added up, it was about three. I watched Good Morning America type show. I'd watch the news when I got home from work, like 6 o'clock news. And then I'd watch maybe the late show, Johnny Carson back then. Today it'd be, Jimmy Fallon or someone like
that.
And he said, I want you to cut out 1 hour of TV. And I said, why? And he said, because you're wasting your life. You're watching other people get rich while you're not. And he said, what happens is he said, I would suggest stop watching the news. And I said, okay. And he said, you're going to gain 365 hours a year if you do that. That's 40 hours a week. That's 9.5 weeks of extra time. That's like giving yourself 2 extra months of productivity. So think about that, Mark. You could have written a book in 2 months. You could have lost 20 pounds in 2 months if you worked out 8 hours a day, whatever. So that's what I did. And the news is all based on trying to make you afraid, or it's all dramatic. Anything boring, they're not going to show you. Anything positive, you get maybe one little snippet at the end of a show, And so that basically is meant to divide people. We saw that.
It's a business, right? I mean, people don't say that, but it's a business. Sorry, go ahead, Jack.
The news is entertainment.
Yeah.
To be on CBS and NBC, the news was its own independent department. Then it became entertainment because they were losing audience to things like, CNN and Fox News and so forth. So basically, you're basically being brainwashed by a certain political viewpoint, whichever side you happen to be on, doesn't matter. But the point being that you're not doing anything productive. So I would agree with, if anything really important happens, you're going to find out who got elected president. You're going to know if there was an earthquake in California. Someone will tell you. So basically, Tim Ferriss, who wrote The 4-Hour Workweek, which is a great book everyone should read, said, take a fast on the news. Just forget about it. Don't watch it because it's not going to uplift you. So I agree with that totally. And I think the other thing I would say too then is, what do you do with that time? And that's where you want to educate yourself. Like you said, you're listening to motivational tapes, self-development things, CDs, podcasts like yours, there's all these TED Talks, TEDx Talks, master classes. There's so much you could be learning right now if you're in the pandemic. And to go back to your earlier question about all the things that people were freaking out about, it's not just the news. People, like you're saying, because of that, people weren't going out in the world. We know, and I'm not an anti-vaxxer. I'm not someone who says you shouldn't wear a mask.
Sure.
We know that no more people have died this year than died last year from the flu.
Right.
So what happens is it's less than 1% of people who've died.
Right.
And obviously, if you're 75 years old and you have comorbidities, you should be really, 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 really careful. But if you're a younger person, as long as you do some normal precautionary things, live your life.
Right.
And let's get on with it and not let fear run you, because fear actually will lower your immune system. And that's what happened. The first couple of months in March and April, everyone was so afraid. They were in fight or flight. They froze. They weren't doing their business. And their immune systems actually go down when you do that. And then your energy goes to the amygdala, which is in the back of your brain. You want to be in the prefrontal cortex, which is where your rational thoughts, your creative thoughts, your ability to pivot, do all the things we needed to do to be online and make a living and so forth. So you're right. There's not that much to be afraid of really in the world. It's like we have most of what we're afraid of. Abraham Lincoln had a wonderful quote. He said, forget the quote exactly now, but he said something to the idea that there were many things that happened that were negative in his life. He said, but most of them never really happened. They all happened in his brain.
Right. I've heard another one that says, worry is a misuse of your imagination.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I know what he said. He said, I've had a life of many troubles, most of which never happened. They were all just in his head.
Right.
And so you can literally scare yourself to death. There's a story I put in one of our Chicken Soup for the Soul books about a guy who thought he was a railroad worker. He got locked inside of what he thought was a refrigerator car. And there was a nail in there, and he started scratching notes on the wall, the wooden wall of this refrigerator car. It's getting colder. My hands are starting to freeze. I can't breathe anymore. And then he died.
Wow.
And the next morning they opened the car and found him. It wasn't a refrigerator car, it was a normal box car. But in his mind, he thought it was a refrigerator car, and he literally scared himself to death.
Wow.
The whole, I can believe in myself, it like to everyone listening right now to understand how empowering this is to know, like listen to me. When I started my company in a barn, I mean, I was in trouble. I was in jail at age 17, and I've gone through Democrats in office, Republicans in office. And I'm not saying not to vote, but what I'm saying is they didn't come out and work 100-hour weeks, regardless of who was in office, for me to go after my dream. And everyone listening and watching, it's your dream. And it's empowering to know, like, you are the captain of your destiny. The news doesn't dictate your destiny. Whatever you believe is, whatever your higher power is that you believe in, it's between you and that, and not what anyone else has to say. And understanding this message today, right now, is maybe more important than ever, because we're more exposed to the masses of social media. And I'm not against, I mean, this podcast has a great use of social media, and how you guys have a huge reach as well. And there's a lot of wonderful free information out there, but be selective of what you're going after, and understand, like, you can do all things. It's you're empowered to do everything if you just believe in it and don't give up. So I want to end off, where, what's the best place? First of all, check this book out on Amazon. Is there a website or any other social media that you want our listeners to connect with both of you? And also, we'll put it in the show notes too. Miriam, is there any direct things that you're on more than the other, or?
you can find my website, miriamlaundry.com online. I'm on Instagram, Miriam Laundry Publishing, on Facebook also, but I Can Believe in Myself is available. You can just go directly to Amazon and you can pre-order now, depending on when this is aired, but it's being released February 23rd. And I'll just say the other thing that's great about the book that I really love, and when I shared earlier that it was self-published and now it's traditionally published, at the end of the book, at the back of the book, Jack has added several exercises for parents or teachers to do with children, all about believing in themselves and all about letting go of that word can't. So definitely something to pick up for the children in your life.
Oh, I see the I Can card on my version right here. I love it. I love it. So Jack, is there anywhere, I know you're all over social media everywhere too, and we'll have all the different links, but is there anywhere specific you want people to go to?
Well, just go to jackcanfield.com. I have all of our courses, all of our workshops, our online coaching programs, et cetera, that we're doing there. And also I'm on Facebook, just, you know, search for Jack Canfield, Instagram, same thing. And as Miriam was saying, there's a lot of activities, and you were noticing too in the back of the book, that you can do with your children, whether you're a teacher, a parent, or if you just want to do for yourself. You know, one of the exercises we have is the I Can't funeral, where we literally take and write down all your I can'ts. And then we have a eulogy that's there you can read about how I can't, you know, lived a long life and was seen in many places, including the halls of government. But now he's survived by his cousins, I Can and I Will. It's really cute. And you can bury them with your children in the backyard, or you can have a funeral. You can burn them, you know, whatever. But the idea is that these rituals and these affirmations and the I Can card and all that actually grounds it into the conscious mind. And that's what we want people to do.
I love it. I love it. And before we end off, I want everyone to also think too about the importance of, this is an example of what I talk about on the show all the time, of investing at different levels, purchasing books, and also paying to go to seminars to taught by people that have actually been and succeeded and have fruits in areas of where you want to go. Because I meet a lot of great people and they're like, but I don't want to invest. And I'm not, listen, everyone, I'm not getting any cut in sponsorship or anything from this. I'm saying this because I know from proof of going and investing in things and having people even at mine at different levels, but you pay to go to things and you invest in it, and you can get more than you can get out of a lot of college courses that I've paid a lot for. And this right here, the fact that I have both of you sitting on this show together, is another example of Miriam, you went after that scary at another level and invested in being together in a seminar and got you to chase these bigger, crazy goals. Mm-hmm. You've already crushed one you already have a freaking Guinness Book World Record under your belt with a little momentum of that going into the release of this book. I mean, if that's not an example of I can, I don't know what else is. And so I just want to say congratulations. I love it. And everyone listening as this airs, jump on, pre-order this book. You're going to love it. You have someone you can share it with. Go to Amazon. We'll be sharing the link. Jack and Miriam, it's been an honor. Thank you so much for being here today. And everyone, never settle, never give up, and keep elevating beyond.